Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your 18,000 feet of musical news and analysis. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. Listening to Mystic Brew by Vijay Iyer Trio. I'm here with Nate Chenin. Hi, Nate.
Hello, Ben.
We were hearing something related to that song. Was it that song itself?
It was that song. It was the very last gesture this morning.
Earlier this morning, Nate and I were both at the same concert. Isn't that kind of weird that we were at a concert in the morning?
It was a rare occurrence.
From 11:45 to 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
At the Met Breuer, formerly known as the Whitney Museum, where Vijay Iyer, for the second half of March, through the weeks, through the days, is doing a performance residency, playing with his normal groups and also in other more
abnormal groups.
Yeah, more abnormal groups. I mean, more experimental configurations involving the rapper Heems. Who else? People outside his...
The novelist Teju Cole.
Teju Cole is doing something with him.
His fellow pianist Craig Taborn.
Right.
A harpist named Brandy Younger.
That's right.
Lots of people.
So this morning we saw Vijay Iyer in a trio with the bassist Harish Raghavan and the drummer Tyshawn Sorey. And we bring it up because today we're going to be talking about how Vijay Iyer's performance residency at the Met Breuer is, strangely enough, not an isolated example of this sort of thing in New York. Right now, there seem to be three such things that one could group together, not necessarily occurring over a condensed period of time like Vijay Iyer's. In the case of Jason Moran, who is doing something at the Veterans Room at the Park Avenue Armory, he has programmed basically a whole year's worth of concerts. Also, Cecil Taylor is going to be at a very curious and interesting, in some ways kind of groundbreaking event or exhibition, performance slash exhibition, something hybrid, at the new Whitney Museum from April 15th to 25th. So let's talk about maybe what this signifies. Nate, what do you think?
Well, I think it's amazing that these three things are overlapping. Any one of them would be one of the jazz events of the spring.
Because it would be so unusual.
Right. These are pianists, composers, band leaders who have all been thinking outside of the usual jazz structures. And in this case, each one has aligned with an arts institution that doesn't really have anything inherently to do with jazz or improvised music. They're really engaging with the institutional resources at their disposal, with the physical spaces at their disposal, and also making social connections, you know. I think it's a really fascinating convergence of forces.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it says something about where this music is now, the ways in which certain ideas that were planted, say, a half century ago are now bearing some fruit.
When you say things that were planted half a century ago, what are you thinking about?
Well, Cecil, for one thing, the fact that he is going to be at the Whitney Museum of American Art, that's significant, and it is not out of character for him. He was doing things at art museums with painters, with choreographers. You know, he himself is a poet and has explored, you know, movement and dance. He was doing this, you know, in the 60s at a time when, on the one hand, you could say that, well, that was sort of the, you know, the experimental currency of the day. But from a jazz context, I mean, you could not possibly have been more outré. You know, it was so strange and exotic and out there, you know. And the fact that Vijay Iyer and Jason Moran, two people who have happily and openly acknowledge their debt to Cecil Taylor. The fact that they are working with arts institutions in a similar way at the same time, I think it's a real reflection of his influence, you know, not just musically, but sort of conceptually, aesthetically.
Right. One thing led to the other.
Absolutely.
When you talk to Cecil Taylor, he will not necessarily talk to you about jazz.
Right.
He will almost certainly talk to you about visual art, architecture, poetry, all kinds of stories. And it takes a little while to figure this out. For some people, maybe a lifetime. But he's more than jazz, or he's more than music, per se.
Right.
You know, I remember doing a piece about Cecil Taylor, I don't know how many years ago, when there was something going on around him at the Harlem Gatehouse that Vijay was involved in. I remember Vijay Iyer making the point to me that to consider his music apart from his spoken word mm-hmm. work, his poetry, is sort of absurd. It's one thing feeds into the other.
And that really
struck me.
I remember when you put that quote in your piece, and I reviewed that concert, which was a solo piano performance with poetry.
Yep. He's been doing for a really long time.
Yeah, and that concert really, it underscored how irrefutable that statement is.
Yeah.
You know, in retrospect, it's such an obvious point, but it's not a point that I think a lot of jazz people would instinctively have made.
Well, there's different ways of thinking about jazz. One is thinking about it sort of as a genre or as a strictly musical tradition, as a set of instrumental traditions or, great instrumental moments, you know, recorded or performed. But then you start to think about, you get to a certain point, you start to think about the fact that music is quite deep and mysterious. Mm-hmm. Like music, just music per se, is deep and mysterious. And it comes from the human body and the human voice. And it's all kind of related, you know? Where I'm going with this is that Cecil Taylor is a perfect example of somebody who sort of forces you to understand that visual art, music, poetry all has something to do with each other. They all have a relationship with each other. The thing we saw this morning at the Met Breuer, the Vijay Iyer performance, is related to, well, not necessarily the performance that we saw, but his new record with mm-hmm. Wodada Leo Smith is related to a show of visual art that they have on display right now at the museum by
Nasreen Mohammadi.
Exactly. The Indian artist Nasreen Mohammadi, who died in 1990. And it's an amazing show of her drawings and her photographs and also her diary entries. And I imagine that some of the music that Vijay is presenting is related to that. I remember there was a time when I used to think that such connections were sort of fanciful, or they worked in the service of synchronicity between different parts of an artistic institute. You know, mm-hmm. like that they were sort of
like the concept led,
and the
art followed.
Exactly, that they were a little bit contrived. I think that less and less these days.
Yeah, it's become a much, much more standard way of thinking about music in jazz. I would say in some ways it's a very 21st century way of thinking about jazz. And, you know, Jason Moran and Vijay Iyer have been a big part of shifting that conversation. You know, they're both MacArthur Foundation fellows, mm-hmm. MacArthur Genius Grant recipients, as is Cecil
as
Taylor,
is Cecil.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something that you could say about the MacArthur recipients in jazz. Most of them do think along these lines. Most of them are very literate in art and literature and philosophy and sometimes science. They're not creatures of the practice room. You know, Jason Moran has been a kind of a model example of putting that into action. You know, his very first album on Blue Note Records in, I think, 1999 was Soundtrack to Human Motion. You know, if you think about that title,
it's what we've just been talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it's very Cecil Taylor-esque, actually.
Yeah.
You know, as Jason has matured as an artist, he's made more of those connections literally, you know, working with visual artists like Joan Jonas, really dealing with an aesthetic continuum that is not just musical.
There was a time in the 80s, it even started in the 70s, but it really got going in the 80s and the 90s, when one of the big conversations to be had around jazz in New York was the institutionalization of mm-hmm. jazz, especially around jazz at Lincoln Center and Wynton Marsalis, but also Carnegie Hall, the American Jazz Orchestra at Cooper Union that Gary Giddens and John Lewis were involved in. And there was the idea of jazz as a repertory. Jazz being considered in the same way as classical music mm-hmm. is to some degree, with a repertory and practice time and, you know, proper theater seating and all that. It was sort of a bid for respectability and, you know, like, this is something that's going to last. You get something like that started, you get a system of supporters and donors, and you know it's going to last for a while.
Right.
But now it's funny. I feel like these three things that we're talking about are signs of the institutionalization of jazz part two, in a direction that I don't think I wouldn't have seen it coming mm-hmm. in the 90s. I wouldn't have seen what we're seeing right now at the Met Broyer, at the Whitney, at the Park Avenue Armory, being done so well. And with such original thinking and opening questions that it's not even necessarily answering.
Right.
About, like, is this jazz? What is jazz? Like, what, you know, what do all these performances have in common? It's not necessarily trying to answer those questions for you.
No.
To make you feel assured.
Right. It's not, there's no pedagogy in this.
Right.
There's no, you don't sense any effort to convert you to the greatness of jazz. It's really more like, here's this cool thing that I'm doing, and I've brought in all these cool people, and you're going to recognize how cool it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we should listen to a track by Jason Moran.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into sort of what these spaces feel like
mm-hmm.
because I feel like that's a big part of it. But why don't we hear some music?
So let's hear from Jason Moran's record, Artist in Residence, which was a record of pieces that he wrote for various collaborations with different kinds of artists, a piece called Artists Ought to Be Writing.
Artists ought to be writing about what they do and what kinds of procedures they go through to realize a work, what their presuppositions in making the work are, and related things. If artists' intentions and ideas were more accessible to the general public, I think it might break down some of the barriers of misunderstanding between the art world and artists and the general public. I think it would become clear the extent to which artists are just as much a product of their society as anyone else with any other kinds of vocation. Artists ought to be writing.
Those artists ought to be writing. By Jason Moran from the record Artist in Residence. Okay, Nate, describe for the listeners what the experience was like this morning at the Met Broyer going into that VJ Iyer show, the size of the room, how it sounded, how many people were in the room, that kind of thing.
Well, you walk into the museum, you get your ticket in the, you know, in the lobby, and the lobby gallery is just past the elevator bank. It's a room that I'm pretty sure historically, you know, when that building was the Whitney Museum, it was almost always room for sound or video installations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big. And they've set up a Steinway with no lid. Beyond that—
A grand piano.
Right. Beyond that, the dimensions change because Vijay's performance schedule goes from solo piano to— two pianists. I'm not sure whether they're bringing in a second piano for Craig Taborn, but that's coming up. To, you know, piano and voice and guitar, to harp and piano. You know, there's all these different configurations. I'm not sure what the largest is, but I think at least six people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this rotating thing. Every day that the museum is open, it's a different lineup. Mm-hmm. So the room itself, you know, the audience is very, very close to the musicians. I'd say seated, that room probably maxes out at 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to guess 75, but somewhere between those numbers probably.
And it's funny, you know, there is in New York now a precedent for an artist taking a period of time in a space and sort of airing all of their different projects. And that is The Stone in the East Village, mm-hmm. John Zorn's space. Vijay has done residencies there. You know, tons of musicians have done residencies there. In a way, this Met Breuer Lobby Gallery thing is kind of like a month-long Stone residency. Mm-hmm. You know, Vijay is working with, he's pulling from a large coalition of artists that he has some affinity with, mm-hmm. you know, and it ranges widely. You know, he has a tabla player, Nitin Mitta. He has, you know, a classical violinist like Miranda Kusun. Mm-hmm. So it's this sort of show of community, of our artistic community. And I really like the feeling of it. The sound is really great.
It sure was.
There's a soundboard and there's a dedicated engineer there throughout the entire residency. Yeah. And so even when you expect to be kind of knocked back by the force of the playing, you know, mm-hmm. today we saw Tyshawn Sorey on drums in a trio setting, and he wasn't really holding back that much.
No,
and
the room
yet
absorbed it.
It's the room really, it really works.
The band is it's a rectangular shaped room with very high ceilings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the band is along one of the long sides of the rectangle.
Right.
And so everybody is positioned around it. Nobody is more than about 10 to 15 feet away from the band. So everybody's hearing it really well.
Yeah. And it was packed, we should say that.
It was packed but not uncomfortable. There were two shows this morning, I think, 10:30 mm-hmm. and 11:45. The whole thing was so novel to go there before lunch.
I was there for the very first performance on, I think, March 1st, which was a press preview. Mm-hmm. I saw Vijay and Mark Turner in a duo, Mark Turner, the tenor saxophonist, and then I saw Vijay's working trio. And so that was special circumstances with an invited audience. Today was the general public, and I was struck by the fact that really everyone signed up for the whole performance. Mm-hmm. It was, what was it, about a half hour, 40-minute set? Mm-hmm. Shorter than a nightclub set,
but not
by too much.
Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot of coming and going. People pretty much stayed put. And I don't know whether that was how they envisioned it or not. You contrast it with like a video installation and people come and go a lot.
Yeah.
And this felt much more like you are seeing a mini concert performance in this little space.
So it was intimate, and the sound was great. The temperature control was exquisite, as long as we're comparing it to the Stone. And it was also like a very simple room, really nothing to look at except the musicians.
And, you know, there is something, too, which is, you know, you mentioned the Nasreen Mohammadi exhibit. I walked through that exhibit before
mm-hmm. yeah, me too.
The performance. You know, without belaboring the point, there is a dialogue there, I think, you know, between her geometric abstraction and the idea of, you know, structural forms used to a, you know, an interesting and sort of off-kilter end. You know, that communicates somehow in the music if you've absorbed all of that art before hearing the music.
Totally. Form and abstraction on equal footing, repetition, open space, all that stuff comes through.
Angularity.
All that stuff comes through in the music. All right, so beautiful sound, simple room, all that. Compare that to the Veterans Room at the Park Avenue Armory.
Which is how many blocks away from the Met Breuer? Not many, right? They're in the same neighborhood, basically.
About 10.
Okay.
Park Avenue Armory, it's one of the rooms that is along the Park Avenue side of the building. The room has been in disrepair for a long time. So they've reconditioned it, and it's sparkling and opened. And what I saw there was the first in the series that Jason Moran is programming, and it was Jason Moran doing solo piano. This room is aesthetics gone bananas. super, super refined aesthetics from
Rococo.
It's called the American Aesthetic Movement. Louis C. Tiffany and company were the designers of this room. You see elements of like Moorish design, Japanese design, lots of geometric shapes, lots of gold and black and pale yellow on the walls, painted tiles, glass, different kinds of shiny brown floors and wall areas that, like, they're so beautiful, they sort of make your mouth water, you know? you just look around and your mind is blown. And
so how does this play out in the music, if at all?
I don't really know. I couldn't create a coherent answer to that question, except for the idea of this riot of styles running together, this combined, this, like, insane hybrid. You could make a case that what Jason is doing is dovetails with that. What's going on in the rest of the season? Pauline Oliveros is going to play with Ione, who is a writer, storyteller, dramatic artist, etc. Jason is going to do something with Louis Andriessen, the Dutch composer, classical composer, who has a big piece, Die Materie, in the big hall at Park Avenue Armory also. What else?
Well, Tyshawn, who we saw this morning.
Tyshawn Sori, the drummer.
Tyshawn Sori is performing with Conrad Tau.
Do you know much about Conrad Tau?
I don't really.
Yeah, me neither. Milford Graves and D'Anthony Parks. Milford Graves, the, you know, foundational free jazz drummer. D'Anthony Parks, I know from a band that used to play at New Blue. What was it called? Anyway, a very different kind of drummer. I mean, really different kind of drummer.
He works with Michel Indigacello.
There you go. Works with Michel also. And visual artists and video artists are going to do things too in performance somehow. Ryan Tricarton and Lizzie Fitch. You see the schedule. It's just a bunch of very impressive names. And it makes you think, what are they going to do? And what does this have to do with Jason Moran? And you start to think, what does this have to do with jazz? And then you pull back because you realize that's not the question being asked.
What is the agenda sort of hidden in that question?
Right. Does Jason Moran have to be a jazz musician, full stop? Is that what his work rests on, his career? No, at this point. Right?
Right.
Is it a traitorous, you know, to the jazz tradition for him to be programming a year's worth of things that aren't necessarily about jazz at all?
Well, you know, he's also the director of jazz at the Kennedy Center.
That's right. Which is much more about jazz as a
big tent.
As a big tent and a living tradition.
You know, last year,
as an African American art.
Last year, he programmed a bunch of really cool stuff at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
He also had a piece in the Venice Biennale.
Yeah.
He also toured widely with his Fats Waller dance project with Michel Indigacello.
Yeah.
He also played with his trio at the Village Vanguard.
Yeah.
You know, you get a real sense with him that there's no either or. John Zorn once told me that he considered himself an additive artist, by which he meant that he never sort of discarded anything.
Mm-hmm.
He did a new thing,
yeah,
and then he just added it to his sort of bag of things.
Yeah.
And he was constantly adding, and nothing ever really died, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Jason Moran is one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, well, I can do this too, and why not do this? And here's this thing that I started to explore but never followed up on. I'm going to follow up on it now.
Right.
So it's exciting. You know, I think there's no reason to consider this any kind of, I don't know, abdication of allegiance to jazz.
Right. Well, if you do consider it that way, you're assuming that jazz is in a precarious position, that it needs all the help it can get, that it will expire. You know, if somebody like Jason Moran, given an opportunity like this, doesn't just fill the room full of the absolute mainline jazz tradition.
Right. And I think that goes to the point you made about the institutionalization of jazz, you know, 1.0. I think the amount of effort that Jazz at Lincoln Center specifically devotes to education and sort of defending the canon and building on historical insights and, you know, just all of this kind of conservation, I think the success, the continuing success and the sheer sort of muscle of all of that frees up a lot of other people to say, well, like, I can engage with that, but I don't have to because it's being well served, mm-hmm. you know? So anyone who has a sort of a twinge of conscience about, well, you know, who's standing up for quote unquote jazz, mm-hmm. Jazz Lincoln Center is they're sort of fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
And I imagine that it's liberating for some other people who might, if that didn't exist, might feel more of a sense of duty
yeah.
to do that.
Going back to Vijay Iyer for 1 second before I forget this thought, it occurs to me that the title of Vijay Iyer and Wodada Leo Smith's album comes from some diary entries by the Indian artist. The meat of the record, the bulk of it, is a suite in 7 parts, I think. And it is supposedly about her, about the artist. But I wonder to what extent it's about the art, or is it about, you know, her diary entries, her ideas,
her
words. Mm-hmm. It could be either.
So that title is A Cosmic Rhythm with Each Stroke.
That's it.
And again, the idea of kind of rhythm or movement
yeah.
in form.
Yeah.
Which maybe brings us back to Cecil.
Well, let's talk about what's going on with Cecil Taylor.
So you were in the gallery space today.
I actually wasn't in the actual gallery space where the thing is going to happen because it's still things are being moved around in there.
Okay.
But it's an 18,200 square foot space with no walls, no interior walls.
A little bigger than the Met Breuer Lobby Gallery.
Probably. Quite a bit bigger.
That was a joke.
Quite a bit bigger. Really big. So, and the Cecil Taylor, it's April 15th to 25th, 10 days. It's like a hybrid of exhibition and performance. It's called Open Plan. Cecil Taylor, we'll know much more about this on Tuesday when they release all the details, when the Whitney Museum releases all the details. But the basic idea is that Cecil Taylor will play at least one formal performance. And other than that, it's quite possible that he will just drop in whenever. And there's a piano there, and he is invited to stroll in and sit down and start playing.
I love that idea.
Yeah, I do too. It's like...
it's the luck of the draw. Yeah, like you should just go hang out there and maybe Cecil will show up.
Yeah, right. It's like a lottery ticket.
I wonder, is the piano going to be roped off or is it going to be like if I roll in there with my 5-year-old daughter, will she be able to play it?
Don't know. That's a good question. But what will be there are videos, photographs, ephemera, maybe, you know, I imagine maybe some of his poetry. Although I don't know, has he written that stuff down or is it just like orature? I don't.
He must have some of it written down.
I guess.
I wonder too. I mean, the size of the space makes me wonder about choreography and dance. You know, there are some really amazing clips of Cecil in the 70s playing the piano and then just sort of in what seems like a spontaneous outpouring, getting up from the piano bench and engaging in some very sort of sculptural movement.
That's it. And that's the other thing that can't be, I'm remembering this conversation with Vijay Iyer now. That's the other thing that can't be separated mm-hmm. from his music is his physical movement.
So in addition to, you know, maybe showing up and playing the piano, like he could just kind of show up unannounced and just walk around
sure.
the space. And,
sure.
and that should also perhaps be considered an expression of his art.
I think there will be various kinds of performances, but we'll know more on Tuesday. This all reminds me of a story about Sun Ra. A friend saw him play, I think it was in the Knitting Factory in the 80s, and he gave a speech at the start of the gig, and the speech was going on for a long time. It was going into outer space, you know? and his philosophy, and it was getting out there. And somebody in the audience, after 10 minutes or whatever, yelled, "Hey, play some music." And Sun Ra looked at him and the audience full of sincerity and said, "This is my music."
Yes. Yes.
You know, so like, all right, so back then, a lot of people might say that as, oh, it might see that as that's Sun Ra being eccentric. Yeah, whatever that means, Sun Ra. But I think now we are actually beginning to understand that he was right, or that there's more truth in a statement like that.
Well, there have been gallery exhibits of Sun Ra's writings and
yes, sure.
ephemera too.
Yeah. You know,
these are artist intellectuals, these people. If Cecil doesn't count as sort of an intellectual in American art,
yeah.
I don't know who does, you
right.
know? So this idea that everything is in dialogue, especially when you see him in performance, I think that's also fascinating to me about this. It's like, I get the sense that whatever happens at the Whitney will be sort of irreducible. It's not like I could see it and then tell somebody, well, this is what it was like.
Right.
You know, there's something about...
Because it'll keep changing.
It'll keep changing, and it'll also be very, very specific to sort of that moment in time, in space.
Right.
You know, there's something that Cecil does that's very sort of electric and, I don't know, mystical, magical. You feel the force of his concentration in that moment.
Right.
That aspect of it doesn't reproduce on records. It's just, it's there.
See, we're talking about exhibitions, institutional exhibitions, in more or less jazz terms, you know, where like the material itself
yeah.
comes and goes. It's maybe even neutral, but it's the intent behind it. It's the spirit behind it. It's the spirit of motion and invention and originality and play and like that.
And curators are interested in that stuff.
Right.
As are we.
So why don't we go out with a piece by Cecil Taylor, Pemmican from Garden second set. This was recently reissued by Hat Art. And thanks very much, Nate Chenin.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thank you for listening. Our producers are Andrew Chow, Tamara Best, and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can see information about these three series or exhibitions that we've been talking about online. The Vijay Iyer at the Met Breuer, which runs through the end of March, you can learn all about at metmuseum.org. Jason Moran's program at the Park Avenue Armory in the Veterans Room runs through November 21st. And you can look at the schedule at armoryonpark.org. And Cecil Taylor's thing at the Whitney Museum, you can read about at whitney.org. And it runs from April 15th to 25th. See you next week.